Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr. You are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make the fine art with needle and thread. And this week from Hands On Design, Kathy Haberman. Kathy, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
We had, when Vanna and I talked about some of the designs that we found interesting before market, the show we did before the Nashville market, you were in the group. You were in the group.
Oh, great.
Pretty easy pickings there, you know, not too tough. But I own a couple of your charts, and what, you know, obviously was aware of what you do, but I had not sat down and actually studied a majority of your designs. And as an editor, okay, the thing that jumped out at me when I really sat down and looked at them is a lot of people use words. But you have a real knack for not only using the words, but the designing of the lettering and the way you combine different fonts, if you will, if you can call it a font,
sure,
in needlework. Uh-huh. Where does that come from? Because I think it really sets you apart. Because a lot of people use words. You know, that's pretty common anymore. But I just think yours really stands out in that way. Where does that come from?
Well, thank you. Number one, I kind of take pride and I believe in font as art, I guess. And that just kind of comes through. My art form is my design, cross stitch. And, so that just kind of started coming through. I guess my background, I was a marketing major, but I also worked in advertising. And, I guess that's probably, if I had to pinpoint anything, I've always been a doodler, I've always been a drawer, that type of thing. No formal training, but definitely inspired by graphics and by, you know, graphic art, that kind of thing. So I think that definitely, probably the first time you saw it come into my work with a bigger influence would be in 2014 when I did the Year in Chalk series. That kind of, I would say that was maybe my first big breakthrough series, so to speak, and just tried to approach each design with creating new fonts. I get a lot of people ask me sometimes, I want to do something in the font that you use. What font did you use? And I have to kind of say, or they want the rest of the alphabet. And I'm like, well, I kind of made it up. I can't just go here.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the whole alphabet. But every once in a while I sit down and I think, you know, I really should create the whole alphabet and save it as a file or something like that. But I really do approach each design with creating a new font. And some may be similar, and some are designed to fit the space. There's all kinds of ways that works together, but I guess I worked at a newspaper, in the advertising department. I've worked at advertising agencies, as I say, back in the day at my real job. And, so that's, I'd say probably that's where the influence came.
Oh, without question. I mean, that's the business. So, conveying a message and visually with words that's the business. So, okay, that makes sense now. I did not know that part of your background, but that makes perfect sense. Sure. And I can see now why you see things like that. So it becomes an art element. Yes. Yeah. Cause whenever we redesign or modify a magazine, it's the biggest tug of war is over fonts and, what reads well, what looks good. You know, can this headline font go with this body copy font, and will it hold up? What goes on the cover? All those things, and if you have that background, you know exactly those arguments. And because it's critical. It's critical, and it makes or breaks most things. And in your designs, it makes them work. At least, you know, in my view, it become you the way you combine them with whatever little motifs you put in, really makes them all come together as a unit. And so it's interesting to know that you're making these up on the fly here. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was working with some good friends of mine. We were collaborating on a design together, and they were they were trying to come up with how we would do the words and that type of thing. And I said, we were kind of just all sitting around the dining room table, passing the computer back and forth. And I said, here, give it to me a second. And I just kind of went boop, 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 boop. And they just kind of looked at me with their jaws kind of fell open. Like, how did you do that? Like, I don't know. I guess that is one thing that I enjoy doing. So.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's, you know, that's also interesting because if you don't have an art training background, that, you know, that's coming out of you naturally, and then you have a graphic arts orientation, so you can tell how it works. Because, you know, I've worked with many, many graphic artists. I mean, I had several of them in the magazine business, and some of them can do that. It's just a natural thing. It just is in them, and the training is just icing on the cake, because they just see it. And it sounds like you just see it and can convert it. And then I've worked with artists that it's all they have is the training and what they can go and look in other magazines and what other people have done and then borrow, steal, or modify. And that's all they have. Sure. And it's very limiting, in terms of what they can do because there's no natural instinctual feel behind it. It's kind of almost rote. And yeah.
Right. Well, actually, last fall I was teaching up in Wisconsin. I had taught a couple classes, and one was helping a guild, Madison Area Guild, celebrate their 40th anniversary, their Ruby anniversary. And so I was up there teaching a class, and then I was also teaching a class at Lynn's of Madison. And kind of, I figured once I was in the area, let's make use of my time up there.
Right.
So, and then I had to give the guild said, would you come speak at our meeting? And I was like, okay, what am I going to talk about? Because I was teaching a class on finishing. So I thought, well, I don't really want to talk about that. And they said, well, why don't you talk about your design process? And I sort of said yes before I really thought about it. Cause I thought,
oops,
do I have a process?
Oops.
what exactly is that process? Uh-huh. So when I actually sat down to really think about what I wanted to say, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to talk about, you know, people, Stitchers always ask me and people always ask me, where do your ideas come from? And the boring answer is to say, well, everywhere, but it really does work that way. And I guess the way I divided my talk to them, I said, you know, I have three influences when I design. Words, no surprise to you, is the number one influence. And I always like that, you know, I have a lot to say, so I put it in my cross stitch. So, you know, words are an influence. Color is also an influence for me. I like to not necessarily always stick to the same color palette. I might use a color palette, say, within a series, but I really like to explore different color palettes. And then the third kind of, I guess, you know, influence for me would be finishing, would be the finish. So sometimes I think you can look at some of my design and you can say, well, that words are definitely the influence there. And some of that other stuff follows. But, you know, I can always tell a design is really good in my perspective, of course, if those three things come together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the words and the color and of course, then the finish. So that's I don't know. Yeah. I guess that's kind of.
Isn't that the toughest thing when somebody says, describe your design process? Not something you think about, you know, you don't think about it. You just do it. Yeah. And then I got to write this down. I don't even know. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and I was actually pretty happy because on this particular trip, my husband was with me because we took a little vacation afterwards. So he's not always there. He comes to market with me and he helps me out a lot with the business. He's only ever actually seen me teach twice now. And the first time was last summer. I had the pleasure to go teach a class in the Netherlands. And that was kind of a bucket list kind of thing. And realistically, it was funny because they put him to work. And so after class, I said, so what did you think? What did you think? He goes, I didn't pay attention. He was helping serve the ladies tea and chocolates and lunch and everything, put him to work. So it was kind of fun to have him in there. And I said, so what did you think of the talk? You know, because afterwards you get up there and you start speaking and like, I'm pretty sure when we're done talking about, I have no idea what I just said.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I said, did it make sense? He's like, well, it made perfect sense to me. So I thought, well, if he gets it, I'm sure other people get it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, explaining the design process is the second worst question, too. What do you do for a living?
Oh, yeah, that.
That's probably
that. That, yeah.
I design cross-stitch. Yeah. Oh, okay. But
no, you know, that's that thing. When you do something almost out of instinct like that, well, you know, and it doesn't have to be just designing needlework, but anything that you just do, mm-hmm. you just show up and do it because you've done it so much and it comes from within. And then somebody wants you to actually itemize the steps. And mm-hmm. I don't even, you know, I know the reaction. I don't know. I just do it. And then,
right.
and then you have to sit down and think it through. And that's a weird process to be in. Yeah.
It is. It is. I, you know, as I said, you know, some things are definitely heavier maybe on the words, and some things are heavier on the color and, you know, finishing a lot. Sometimes with finishes, I think you had asked me earlier, you know, do I ever see the finish before I see yeah. the design? Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, one of my block party series, that was kind of the series that wasn't supposed to happen. That happens a lot as well. Is I do something and I don't intend for it to necessarily be a series, but it ends up being a series because either stitchers respond to it or I feel like, hey, we got more to do here. the block party, the first one was home. And the inspiration for that was actually an image I saw somewhere. Somebody had gift wrapped a square box and had taken, it was in craft paper, and all around the edges, they had hand drawn like a little neighborhood in pen and ink.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fascinated me. It was so simple, but so beautiful. And I thought, how can we do that in cross stitch?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's really how Block Party was born.
Uh-huh.
And then I think we've done, 7 of those in the original series. What's kind of fun is I sort of picked up on, you know, we do the pins. It's based on a 4-letter word. I always say a nice 4-letter word. And then I kind of let the series go. And then actually at market, I brought 2 more out. So there was Meow and Woof. Because I just thought, well, I can't do cats without doing dogs and vice versa, of course.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But,
you irritate half the population with that. Yeah.
And who knew it was going to be such a big year for cats and dogs at market? My goodness.
Yeah.
They were everywhere.
Yeah, they were.
It's funny how that happens.
Yeah. Well, that's that thing that the cat and dog thing is interesting. Because you have, you know, there's your social media. I mean, every day, mm-hmm. thousands of cat and dog pictures are posted. And,
right.
and you know, some of that's going to spill over into design. It just has to. It's what you see. It's, you know, and for a lot of people, it's their sole companion. And, and anybody who's had pets knows that they become part of the family. And they're not just an animal. They're
Absolutely.
Part of the family. And so, yeah, yes. so that comes to be. And... there are plenty of cats and dogs.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that happens at markets sometimes. I was actually talking to, I was talking to both, Lindy Stitches.
Stephanie Webb.
Sorry, Stephanie, I didn't mean to blank on your name. but I was talking to Stephanie, and I was also talking to Cecilia from Heart and Hand, and without really, you know, showing each other, somebody had sort of made a funny comment about a bunny, and we all kind of messaged each other and said, I think there's going to be a lot of bunnies at market. and I was talking with a little bit more with Cecilia, and, you know, she's been designing for quite a long time. It's really kind of funny when trends like that happen. So this year, definitely lots of bunnies and lots of cats and dogs. So, you know, and I jokingly have talked about this in some of my floss tubes, because like say I did the 12 Days of Christmas. Linda from Erica Michaels was doing her 12 Days of Christmas. And, you know, we didn't know each other was doing that.
Yeah.
I said, wouldn't it be nice if there was some giant tote board, like, okay, this year you get 12 days, you get, you know, and yeah. But it doesn't happen that way. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's just it. Yeah. I've often wondered if, like, 12 Days of Christmas is a classic. If you collected all right. of the series that have been done for 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You fill a room.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, and it's fun that you do. In fact, I said I did a funny little video with Linda at Market when we did them. I did the well, you know, because her name's Linda, but her company is Erica Michaels Designs. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I said in the video, I said, "This is my good friend Erica," and she just kind of looked at me. Now, Kathy, my name is Linda. So it just kind of set the tone, and we did a little like kind of a, you know, this is my 12 days and this is her 12 days. And isn't it wonderful that we both did 12 days, but each in our own style. And,
right.
I even kind of said, I think within every designer is a 12 day series, you know, just kind of in your own style. It's fun to see.
Right. Oh yeah.
It would be quite something to have everybody get theirs together.
Oh, I think so. I think it would be great fun. And, just to see, because I haven't studied them all by any stretch, but I don't ever feel like, oh, that's just a copy of this, or that's
right.
They all seem to have a distinctive approach to it. And
right.
Yeah, it's just fun to see that happen. And like you said, yeah, you have no idea what the other's doing. And then all of a sudden they all show up in right. one building and it's cats and dogs everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know, we were even kind of joking. Wouldn't that be funny if we actually all did bring our animals to market? Now that would put a completely different spin on things.
Sure would. Yeah, sure would. Yeah. How is it that, I mean, you have a ton of series. Is that, do you start out saying this is going to be a series? Or does the market say, hey, boy, I'd like another series there? How does that happen? Because, well, I mean, you are almost the queen of series.
I jokingly did call myself the queen of series one time because I thought, whoa, this is, you know, I told myself a long time ago, one series at a time. Well, right now I think I have about three going on. Uh-huh. So it just sometimes I call them, you know, there's the accidental series, like I talked about with the block parties. I did the one and then we were like, okay, I think I like this concept. I like this finish, especially if stitchers are really going to pick up on an unusual finish. So let's explore it more. And the home maybe didn't speak to somebody, but then we went down, we did Java, we did Vino, Mend, picked different themes. So one may speak to somebody and one may not. So that was kind of like what I call the accidental series. I would say the first real series, of course, would have been, as I said before, the chalk, year in chalk series. And, that was kind of my big, that was the series that almost didn't happen. I had the idea, the concept for chalk, and I thought, I am asking stitchers to do two things that they absolutely hate. Stitch on dark fabric.
Yeah, and that's the big one right there.
And I'm asking you to do it in both, both of those items. So, you know, if you ask my husband, he can say I went back and forth. I don't know how many times I seriously thought another designer was coming out with the concept. And without speaking to her and showing my hand, so to speak, I thought, well, OK, maybe I won't do this. And then I had a little bit of encouragement from other friends in the industry. And then finally, one night I just went, you know what? What do I have to lose? You know? And so I went forward with it and all the designs pretty much came pretty quickly. And that was what I definitely call an intentional series. What was kind of fun is just that, you know, the stitcher started stitching them so quickly because they're small pieces and they just kept wanting more. Mm-hmm. We mailed the first two out within like a few weeks. They were like, when's the next one coming out? I was like, really? You're ready for it now. And then again, some things like ornament series, obviously 12 days is an obvious series. But what I like about series is that, a lot of times, like with the, well, with the Scary Apothecary that just came out, obviously it's a lot of fun words And honestly, the ball just starts rolling with those. And there's so much good material in there that it would be hard. And actually, I've left a few out. There's 9 in the series, and not everything made the cut, so to speak. There's a lot of good, fun concepts in there. And I mean, most of the time a series happens just because there's just good stuff in there. And, I don't want to leave it out.
Right.
So that's, and then sometimes, if I'm really playing, like when I did White Christmas, that was a Christmas series 2 years ago. That was definitely one that was strongly influenced by color. It's Christmas ornaments there, but there wasn't a red in the bunch. And again, I like taking chances every once in a while. I thought people are going to like this or they're not going to like this because it doesn't have red. But thanks to social media and the power of it, a few people made some color changes, and I had a lot of people intrigued by the color palette because it was very soft whites and beiges and creams and teals and greens. I called them quiet colors, and just very soft, pale for Christmas. And some people bought them and actually infused red in the different spots, posted their pictures, and suddenly everybody's like, oh, I love it with the red and all these, then they followed suit. So, we talked a little bit about social media and how that's just been, huge for our industry. And it's fun to see. And you have to know it's one of the most gratifying things to just, get on in the evening and scroll and oh, cool. Somebody's stitching something, and that's pretty neat.
Well, yeah, and I got to believe as a designer to see, number one, to see people stitching your designs, but then to see them take them and go do something different with them is gratifying, number one. But also, I got to believe is a huge stimulus for other ideas for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you're able to see influences from all over the world, which is not something we've ever had. Because you would just get local influences, or if you're teaching, you would see little snippets here and there in the country or in the world. But now you can see from all over the world, and you get the way different people see colors and combine colors that is not something we've ever had. And I'm sure as a designer, it really wait, I better save this one. This has got some potential here.
Right. Yeah. Well, I save all kinds of pictures. I probably have, a ton of, Pinterest boards, a lot of resources I go to for color combinations. Cause as I said, that's a strong influencer for me. And, finishing it. And trust me, there have been many times when I'll put something out there and then the stitcher comes along and stitches it, posts her finish. And I think, now why didn't I do that? that's really cool.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I try and keep in mind with the finishes, that it is easily available, products are easily available, that type of thing, whereas I would love to maybe finish something in a vintage frame. I kind of collect frames from antique dealers and flea markets and things like that. I like the ovals and the circles, and I would love to do something in that. But, a lot of stitchers, they want to finish it just like you did. That's probably the one part I find that's maybe limiting to me sometimes, is because I love finishing. But I got to watch how I finish mine or how it shows on the cover. It needs to be something that it can be reproduced, I guess. So
You have to have a sensitivity to that. Lots of people, I want to do it just like that, and you understand that. I mean, that's what draws them to it in the first place, is, well, I really like that, so I'd like to replicate that. If you put out a design that people can't replicate, you're just going to frustrate them.
Right. Yeah. So sometimes I do try and stitch something, like say if I had a sometimes I do use stitchers. I have stitchers that help me with different designs, because there's no way I could do all that myself. But sometimes I'll stitch it again, myself, and then I'll finish it. Just because I like most of my models, they do travel a lot. I always joke and say they have to earn their keep. And so they're out on trunk shows, or they go with me when I teach someplace. And but, you know, then I'll maybe restitch it myself, and that, so I can have something hanging in my home. So otherwise, I don't get to enjoy it.
Wow, folks, she actually likes her own designs. Think about that. No, but well, that's an interesting thing, because you design them, you see them, because, you know, I do magazines all the time, and by the time a printed magazine comes out, I couldn't care less. You know, I just couldn't care less. I'm on to, you know, two magazines, two issues down the road. I've seen it eight times. Yeah. I've lost interest. You know, it just whatever. Mm-hmm. It got printed. It got mailed. I don't care, because I got the next one coming up here. And so it's pretty rare anymore, a lot of years behind that, but it's pretty rare that I'll even sit down and look through an issue that came out, because I've seen it 10 times.
Right.
You know, yep. So it's interesting that, and I'm sure by the time you actually ship out a chart, you've seen it more than 10 times, designed it, proofed it, stitched it, maybe had someone stitch it, checked it, you know, and then at some point, enough of that. So the fact that you actually hang it in your house is good.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. There's usually a time period right before market. And I know as a designer, I am not alone in this, but I won't name names. There gets to be a time right before market when I'm just like, okay, I can't stand any of it. Just let's get on with it already. Yep. And my husband usually comes home, and I'll say something, and he goes, "Yep, we've reached that point." It happens every year.
Because
typically, if I do a series, I kick it off at Nashville. I take the whole series with me. It's all done. When we talk about, you were asking me about series, that's one thing I definitely find, I don't know how anybody else is, but when I do design a series, I like to design it right in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Especially something not necessarily like the block party, but something like the 12 days or the White Christmas, where there definitely is like a cohesive theme. I like to get that done because when I'm done with the series, like you said, I'm done. I've seen it. I'm ready to move on to what's next. Now, the last design may not distribute yet or, get released yet for another 6 to 9 months, but I'm done. It's done.
Right.
I still love it, but I'm done.
Yeah. So that, that's an interesting part too, because one of my favorite podcasts is Mark Maron. And he's a comedian and a brilliant interviewer, just really brilliant. And he has talked frequently because he acts in a Netflix, I think it is, show called Glow about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember as a kid watching that for completely different reasons. Mm-hmm. But but he has talked frequently about this concept of Netflix, Amazon, of dumping the whole series on one day as opposed to stringing it out. And his, his view is that you take some of the excitement out of it, that by spreading it out, that you generate some ongoing excitement. And I watch this today and, I can't wait for the next one. And I think, I've seen that in stores with your series, and obviously you've heard it. When's the next one coming? And I think that there's some validity to that, as opposed to here's all 12 days of Christmas, buy them. All right, that's over. Now what?
Well, and I think I like getting them done and showing them to the shops at market, mostly because I want them to know that they are done.
Right. They're not going to get strung. They're going to get hung out at 9.
and just so they can see them and then get excited about them. And then they can go back to their shop or their stitch group or their retreat or whatever and say, "Oh, I've seen them all, you're going to love this, So yeah, I definitely, it helps. It helps in actually being able to design forward, you know, to every year, the goal is be more prepared, you know, work further ahead. Yeah. And, you know, people, that's another question I get asked a lot is, you know, how far in advance do you work? And, I would love to say, oh, a year ahead all the time, but I would lie to you.
Yeah. I wouldn't believe that. I wouldn't believe that if you paid me.
Yeah. Well, that's good. but I mean, some things every year I get a little bit better. I mean, like Scary Apothecary, that was, you know, basically done and we were stitching and we were working because, well, with that, you know, I'm working with hand-dyed threads. I'm working with hand-dyed linen. I'm working with Krynek braid. I need to notify them.
Right.
So that they can be prepared, you know, when shops want to order and things like that. So, but then they're definitely, so that one I felt, you know, I was pretty confident with that and that was done nice and early, but yeah, it seems like every year right before market, there's that one that just kind of sneaks in the door, you know, yeah. Something maybe doesn't work out quite right. Or, you know, it's good to have options. That's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. Does that get to be kind of a pain in the butt challenge with the different threads that you use and the buttons and other things, in that you create a series and then the threat that maybe a year from now something won't be available? Is that kind of always an irritant? And that's not the right word, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think most of us have learned. I mean, I really think that's why you don't see as many, say, limited editions as you used to. Uh-huh. I know, you know, they've just, because they, for a while it was, you know, got to have that one, you know, because different designers had them, that type of thing. I really kind of think, you know, when we talk about the whole social media, I think that social media has made that, I know it's what has turned me off of doing limited editions, because somebody maybe bought that limited edition a couple years ago and then now they're finally stitching it and then they're showing the picture and then that always generates, oh, who's the designer? Oh, where did you get it? And then, yep. You know, and they come back to me and I'm like, it was a limited edition. I can't get that anymore. So I really kind of think that's why you've seen a lot of that fall off.
Yeah.
Truthfully. Yeah. I mean, you know, but typically in, you know, one thing is that I've had shops tell me they love, a lot of my kits, I call them chart packs because they include the little bits of wool or they include some buttons and things like that. I really do try to keep products, those little extra bits, I call them, things that are easily, I know they're going to be around, kind of thing. Or if I would have to substitute it, something like that, you know, definitely, I've got options again. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, just it's, yeah, you have to be careful though. Yeah, because somebody digs something out for they bought 3 years ago and all of a sudden there's interest.
Right.
And then I can't help you. And then you got frustrated customers and that's never good.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I can always tell, you know, it's funny, I'll see somebody stitching an older design and sure enough, usually a week or two later, you know, one of the distributors will call or a shop will call and like, or I maybe don't see it and I think, okay, who's stitching this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
well, and
that's
yeah. And you're never going to win that battle because we all buy stuff and have it stacked, either small stacks or large stacks. And then mm-hmm. one day you say, hey, you know, I'm going to do that one. And, yeah. And it turns out it's 4 or 5 years old. I've got some that are 25 years old that I have never stitched.
Right.
And, yep. A matter of fact, I have a design, I have no idea who did it, but I have a chart. It's some cardinals on some branches. And, and it was of course designed to be on white Aida 20 years ago and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking the other day, oh, on 40 count linen, those cardinals, oh, I could have some fun with it. And I thought, wow, I just might haul that thing out and do it and do it. Cause it was designed, and it would be quite large on whatever it was designed for. I don't even know what the count
sure.
is, but it would be a nice little pretty design on a 40 count linen. And oh man, that could be, but that would be completely out of left field to even show that. And there's,
right.
you know, there's
yeah.
no way it exists anymore. No way you could get it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, now you started stitching when you were a little girl, right?
I was, yes.
How does that?
I was about 9 years old.
Oh, okay. How does that, I don't even know if you remember, but I'm just curious, when you start then, is that just an idle thing? Was that just an idle thing for you that you just did off and on? When did you start to get serious? Or were you serious out of the gate?
I would say I was pretty serious out of the gate for a while.
Okay.
I had a little bit of a break. I'm the youngest of three girls, and we all at one point sewed or made our own clothing. And my oldest sister could, of course, drive long before I could. So one of the places she used to love to go was Minnesota Fabrics. And wow. It doesn't exist anymore. But they had an awesome craft section. And so I used to tag along, and you know, she'd be looking at the patterns and the fabric and whatnot. And at that point, I had not learned how to sew. But I wandered over to the craft section, and oh, the pretty colors. And of course, I looked at all the nice, bright, shiny DMC and just how lovely it was. And I do clearly remember looking at the, you know, they had a large selection of kits. Now, these were, my first piece was actually a stamped cross-stitch kit.
Sure.
And, and I went home, and I really wanted to do this. And it was a large sampler at the time, if, you know, for a 9-year-old. And I got permission to spend my birthday money, and I got it. And I was pretty much self-taught. You know, the particular piece still hangs in my mother's house. And I keep saying, someday I want that back. I want to say that probably took me several years to finish. I was a big doodler, a big drawer. I used to just draw nonstop as a little kid. And so then my mom, was actually not a stitcher. My sisters and I all stitch. And so my oldest sisters were great quilter. My middle sister does a ton of beading. Mm. So we each kind of have our little area. And my mom tried, I think, to pick it up one time. She likes to tell the story that, I kind of walked behind her, and I didn't think I was a bratty kid, but apparently she was doing this little needlepoint kit, something like that. And it was, you know, I don't know, she was doing some basket weave or something like that. And I walked behind her. She was sitting on the couch, and I kind of came back and I looked at her and I said, you know, you're doing that wrong.
Oh, well, no, you didn't. You didn't.
Yeah, apparently I did. Well, she kind of threw it down in disgust, and I finished it for her.
Oh, geez. Oh, man.
So, yeah.
That's so rubbing salt in the wound, you know, right there.
Yeah. It, you know, I think needlework and that type of thing, it just really was not her thing. You know, we talked about it later, like, you know, how did we end up sewing? And my, you know, I think what happened was, you know, I've seen the clothing that my mother wore. It was beautiful, but she had four aunts that made her clothes for her.
Oh.
You know, they might take something from the previous year and cut it down and make it fitted to her. So she, you know, she didn't need to learn how to sew. She had all those seamstresses at her beck and call. So,
she had people.
so we learned, exactly. She had people, but we learned how to sew. And I mean, I quilt as well. I have done that for years. It's just kind of funny because the three of us just all sort of fell into our, kind of our own little niche. My oldest sister is as I said, a beautiful quilter, but she's a very technical sewer. You know, suits and fitted pieces. She's actually we used to call them home teachers, but now they're called fax teachers. My other sister does beautiful beading, and she'll make dolls and things like that. So, so we all love handcrafts, and I like quilting, but you know, when it comes to that, I like speed. Quick patterns. but not so much into the tailoring and things like that. So I like to work with different color fabrics if I'm choosing fabrics for a quilt, something like that. So definitely that's an influence there too. So I don't know. And in the finishing, I really just started. I think my finishing was really born out of necessity, because in the beginning I couldn't afford to custom frame things, or I couldn't afford to finish all my ornament, or, you know, have my ornaments finished professionally. And I just really kind of picked it up. And one of my first jobs right out of college, before, you know, landed the real job, so to speak, was I was actually working in a custom framing shop. And the gal who owned one of the shops knew how to lace needlework, and she taught me how.
Oh.
And that's, you know, kind of where I picked that up. And so a lot of those skills just really translated over to finishing ornaments and things like that. And to me, I know there's just something fascinating about taking this piece that you stitched, but then creating, you know, the secondary step of just creating the finished product. I think it's just, it's fascinating.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And, actually making something out of what you stitched. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rather than putting it in a drawer and moving on to the next one.
Right. Yeah. And I've, you know, I actually, when I had, I did own a needlework shop for quite a few years. And as when I had the shop, I actually did all the finishing for the shop. And did, when I closed the shop, I was a full-time finisher. And I guess then the designing sort of came after that. I as a finisher, I was working a lot in my house, and you know, I missed this. I missed talking to people. And I found I really missed teaching, and that's sort of how the design kind of came about, and traveling and teaching. And I've been pretty fortunate to be able to do quite a bit of travel to teach different places. That seems to be, you know, if you talk about the trends in the industry right now, this has been, I think, for a couple of years, is, you know, shops and groups having retreats and inviting designers in to come teach. And it's fun, because I've been all over the country. Like I said, last summer I had the opportunity to teach overseas, and it's fun because some of these women travel. I mean, I've taught them on the East Coast, and I've taught them on the West Coast. So you get your little, I don't want to call them groupies, but it's fun to, it makes you realize what a small community we are.
Well, I mean, if you have the time and wherewithal to travel like that and like to travel, then what mm-hmm. fun to go to different cities and do a class with your favorite designer and then experience that city. I mean, that's kind of gives you a double hit there. So why not? Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So that's where, so the designing, that's interesting. Number one, I admire you finishing and running a shop. Boy, that would burn most people right out.
Well, that's part of the reason why we only had the shop 9 years.
For how many years?
We had it 9 years. And I have two boys, and I always tell people that that shop was kind of like my third, fourth, and fifth child all rolled into one.
I believe that. Yeah.
I mean, we live in a smaller community. We withstood a lot of downsizing. Gateway Computers, I don't know if anybody even remember Gateway Computers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that kind of came in, it was big in our area, and then we lost a lot of that manufacturing, and then IBP, Iowa Beef, you know, they moved a lot. We just, our area just went through big transitions, and a lot of my customers either lost their jobs or got moved away. And so we were constantly coming up with fun activities to just draw customers in, and, you know, building a good web presence. We didn't have social media then. And shops were really just kind of starting to get websites. The online store was unheard of at that point. So it was definitely a different time.
But that practice is still, I mean, that's the key for shops, is that practice mm-hmm. right there of creating reasons for people to come to the store and mm-hmm. events. I mean, that's the key. Successful shops today are the ones that do that the most. And
absolutely.
Yeah, because you have to give people a reason to come in, and you make an excitement, you create an excitement. And boy, I'd forgotten all about Gateway. Oh, that must have been a heck of a hit when they shut down. Wow.
Oh, it really was. I mean, it really changed the demographic of, you know, they were just north of town, north Sioux City area. But yeah, that there's a lot of good empty buildings up there.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, because there was a time where they couldn't make them fast enough, and
right.
Yeah,
right.
Those cow. It was the cow box. Yeah.
Yep.
Cow pattern box.
It was
yep.
the big. Yep. There's a very large building up there. I think they've actually recently repainted it, but yeah, it was the big cow spotted building.
Oh, they actually painted the building that way?
Yep, yeah, they did.
Oh.
Oh, yep, my. They sure did.
Oh, I've forgotten about them. Yeah, those were crazy times. That whole computer craze. Oh, geez. And yep, yeah, somebody like Gateway. Yep. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, those were back in the days when, I mean, my husband and I laugh about it every once in a while. We said, yeah, remember when we couldn't afford a computer? It was a luxury.
Right,
now,
right.
You know, we've got iPads and cell phones and, you know, all this, you know, all the technology, you know, heck, all the technology on your wrist.
Right.
So.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That was the thing. Oh, I remember. Yeah. You bought your first PC. Well, I remember the first PC, mm-hmm. IBM PC we bought for the magazine, and we had one for the entire staff, and we had to schedule time because the thing with two floppy disk drives cost like $7,000 or $8,000. You know, it was just
right.
ridiculous for something that really couldn't do much of anything. And, but oh, it was a major investment. And yeah, you know, now we've got on our wrist more computing power than that thing ever thought it had. And
right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, when, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, working in advertising and graphics and things like that, I used to work at a newspaper in the Northern Virginia area. And part of my job was to every Tuesday night go do a press check. And like doing a press check literally meant going and proofing the pages and straightening typeface out on pages. Uh-huh. Of course, none of that is, you know, I mean, you walk away with sticky hands because you're the waxing machine, you know,
right.
to lay yep. all the pages out. I mean, none of that is done like that anymore.
Yep.
You know, you probably find one of those on eBay or something like that.
Well, that's how I learned a typewriter, and then camera ready copy, wax it, key yep. line it. Yeah. All of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it took forever to put a magazine together. Ever.
Right. Look at the advent, or just, you know, the changes in our charts.
Yeah.
You know, I look back at some of my early charts, you know, where you have the colored paper and I never had to do anywhere. It was you know, you draw the symbols type of thing. But you know, we printed multiple copies of pictures and glued those on with sticky dots and uh-huh. all that kind of stuff. And I said one time it would be fun to do a retrospective of my charts from, you know, 10 years ago to charts today. It would just, I mean, you'd probably crack up if you saw
yeah.
how much they've changed and how much better they look. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah. I have a handful of charts that were the hand-drawn symbols, and you pick them up and you go, boy, that'd be nice to stitch. Then you look at the chart and you go, no, 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 thanks.
Yeah.
Pass.
Yep.
I don't need that. Yeah. I do not need that. Yeah. We were talking before we started, because we were talking about the how active the cross stitch in particular, but the needlework community in general is. And yeah, mm-hmm. and I keep using the word sophisticated. I just think today's designs compared to, you know, 80s or whatever, where it was a lot of precious moments and those kinds of things, are just sure. so much more sophisticated. And I, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right word, but I really feel like you designers across the board are operating at a level that is, it really makes it a different kind of needlework. And you were talking about the home decor part. And I thought that was
right.
an interesting view of that.
Well, I think, you know, there's always going to be a place in the needlework world for the larger samplers, or what I, you know, the large, like, say, well, like a mirabilia type design, you know, where it's a large piece, or, you know, the heaven and earth or those kinds of things. But I really think what you're seeing a lot now is, and it's definitely been an influence on my design, is cross stitch as an item of home decor. I mean, I know that sounds counterintuitive to say, because, you know, if you do that big mirabilia angel or the big heaven and earth, you're probably going to, well, hopefully have it framed and hang on your wall. And what is that? That's home decor. What I'm referring to is that seasonal touch, or those special little touches that you might, you know, change out your home. I mean, there's such an influence between, like, say, HGTV and a lot of the home, like the home flipping channels,
right,
you know,
yeah.
the flipping the house kind of thing, you know, I mean, DIY, you know, it's just, it's huge, and it's been huge for a long time. And it's almost kind of like, now as we look at, oh, there was what actually kind of got me doing my first floss tube was Adobo. Somebody commented that they saw somebody talking on Floss Tube about, you know, they had Adobo and they had a bunch of my little small pillows in it, and they were all Valentines. And that kind of thing is what I'm talking about. You know, you might create a beautiful centerpiece on your dining room table with maybe some florals or candles, and then also touches of your needlework in there. And it might be seasonal, or it might, you know, it might be a monthly thing, or it might just be winter, spring, summer, fall. I really think you see that as a trend now. And especially when you look at your big box stores, you know, your Hobby Lobbies, your Michaels, your AC Moores, those type of places, you see some just amazing finishes and people using, well, things like Series to change out each month and, right, and that type of thing. I just see that's a huge influence in our market right now. And I don't know. It's fun. Yeah. It's exciting.
Well, and I think part of it is obviously the HGTV world, which no thanks from my perspective, but you know, but the designs are such these days that they lend themselves to that. You can create, you know, a little bowl with some pillows or some flat folds or any number of things, and they fit into home decor, and they don't look, you know, and I'm going to offend someone, but they don't look cheesy. They look classy and nice,
and
I think that's part of the difference and part of the excitement over, particularly with cross stitch, but needlework in general, is just that, is that people can see this could sit in my home and be admired. Yeah, and it doesn't get old.
I think you definitely and I think that's why you see more series. You also see a lot more smaller designs. I do tend to do a lot of smaller designs, not on purpose all the time. There are times I have one of my original early designs called the Everyday Sampler. It was quite a large sampler. But yet I felt called to also take that larger sampler and create a smaller version, mostly because I know my time is limited and I want to be able to stitch this and hang it in my home or use it to decorate. So that's why sometimes I do tend to gravitate towards smaller pieces, because we want to be able to have something that we can, you know, stitch in a shorter period of time and then finish in a fun way and then decorate our homes. I mean, I definitely see a real trend towards people wanting to surround themselves with things that are beautiful and that are unique. And not just necessarily something that's been mass produced or whatever, or, right, you know, kind of mix it all together, so to speak. So, I definitely see that. Yeah. The influence of, I hate to use her because everybody talks about, you know, the Joanna Gaines effect. There you go. I mean, cause you know, she's everywhere in home decor, but, you know, so many, I don't know. I see that as a really big influence in the way we design now. And, and the other thing I think I'm really happy to see, you know, of course I still get the people say, I'm so scared to finish. I'm scared to make that small pillow or that, you know, this small or that small. I actually really see a lot more stitchers really attempting their finishing. And I'm so excited because especially me, since a lot of my designs are very finishing centric, you know, I think that's amazing. And I love it when people take advantages of the tutorials that I put on my website. And I try and make them heavy on pictures, few on words, because we all look at the pictures anyway. Nobody reads them. You know, I don't know. I do definitely see, especially, well, I happen to belong to a couple Facebook groups, one all about smalls. And so there you definitely see, I mean, there's like thousands of people in that group and a lot of them are finishing little pillows or Beast Cornues or the mattress finish. And so I think I've seen a lot of other designers also, you know, starting to carry over with that in their designs as well. And
those smalls are approachable when it comes to finishing too. Yeah, you can.
Absolutely.
You can actually literally wrap your hands around it and figure it out. Yeah, it's.
Yep. Yeah, and they're kind of actually they're for me they're fun to design for, especially as a kid. Somebody said, you know, I like to do jigsaw puzzles as a kid, and maybe that's the influence. I don't know, but like when I designed for something like Block Party, or I just did a series called Around the Holiday. It was a series of, I called them short stacked drums because they were short and kind of squat. And I also like to name my things. I don't know why, but I just do. But anyway, it's kind of fun because I know the space I'm working with. So it's fun for me to sometimes take the motifs and make them fit in the space. And in kind of a creative manner, sometimes having some of the images float from top to bottom so that in the finishing, you have to put it all together to make your images kind of line up and meet and sort of complete the, you know, complete the motif or whatever it is, you know. So that's kind of a fun thing to do. I see a lot more design out there that's more intriguing that way.
Yeah.
I guess is maybe a good way to say it.
Well, again, FlossTube and social media in general, the creativity in terms of types of finishing.
Definitely.
We're seeing so many, rather than just a flat fold or a pillow, it was people doing some really unusual things and change, you know, just putting things on a different level again, just with their own creativity. Right.
I released a chart at Market. It was called More Chocolate Bunnies, and you know, pretty simple chart. It's not a really small piece, but obviously it's pretty easy to get done fairly quickly. And I have seen it finished in so many different ways. Somebody flat finished it, and then they mounted it on a wooden bunny. Yeah. That they got picked up at a craft store. I've seen people flat finish it, add fabric around it, and then they mounted it in a wreath and then hung the wreath on their door.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me, just the number. And because, you know, I see it, I'll repost it, somebody else will repost it, or they'll share or whatever. You know, right. Yeah, definitely that social media influence is huge.
Right.
It's huge. And the floss tube. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And those ideas spread at a speed that like we've never seen. So yeah, it just reaches so many people it's just fun. It's just really, truly fun. Yep. Kathy, we got to stop.
Oh, okay.
It happens.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate
hour.
It. Yeah, no, it goes fast.
Well, thank you for asking. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening, and I don't know who's coming up Wednesday. I lose track. But anyway, somebody with me Wednesday. I don't know. Thanks for listening.